Good evening. Welcome to another edition of the Gelsnet podcast, the independent Rangers podcast by fans for fans, where all the content is absolutely free. Coming to you in association with Forest Precision Engineering. I'm your host tonight, Brian Archer, and as always, we'd encourage you to get onto the Gelsnet website and check out our forums for all your latest Rangers news and discussion. We're live tonight on the YouTube channel, and we'd ask that you continue to share the pod on social media, spread the word, and please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Before I introduce my guests for tonight, I need to give another mention to our partners over at Forest Precision Engineering. They're a Glasgow-based engineering company who have been a big commercial supporter of Rangers for a number of years, and we're delighted to have them supporting the podcast. If you want more information about them, please visit their website at www.forestprecisionenge.com. They also have a stunning executive lounge in the Ibrox main stand. And for more information on that, email the club at hospitality@rangers.co.uk. Now to bring in my guests, joining me tonight is Alex Anderson. Alex, how's things?
Not bad, mate. Not bad at all. Even to yourself, to Alan, and all the listeners, and also Frankie. The thing I'm bothered about tonight is I don't get to see the thumbnail. Frankie usually puts out a good thumbnail advertising the podcast. We kind of see that. It's usually a pun or it's alliteration or something like that. So I don't know if he's going to do a kind of pun on the Dr. Livingston, I presume, because it's Livingston. I've always wanted him to do something like drew at Livingston, I presume, dumped at Livingston, I presume. But the thing I always found most interesting about David Livingston, Dr. Livingston, was he used to regularly take his wife up the Zambezi. And I feel kind of that's how I feel tonight, as if I've been kind of maybe taken up the Zambezi by events today. You know, it's kind of a difficult passage, muddy, dark, bit painful. But she endured, so I feel a bit more like Mary Livingston tonight. How's yourself, mate?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. You've cheered me up with that there, I'll be honest. Also joining in us tonight is Alan Rogers. Alan, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Good evening, gents. What sort of podcast have I joined? Sorry, with this kind of smutty innuendo. This is highbrow, high class, precise sporting chat here, I hate to say. You know, what's going on?
I'm talking about one of Scotland's greatest intellectuals. And never, Alan, never. Go to cheer yourself up somehow, mate. So.
Yes, I'm good. It's been an exciting day, hasn't it?
Yes, we can always rely on Alex to lighten the mood and cheer us all up.
Or bring the tone down.
After what was a disappointing day from a Rangers point of view. So we'll get into it. Alan, we'll start off with the team news. Danny Rowe had mentioned on Friday that there were some injuries. He was kind of a bit coy on who was injured and how many changes he might need to make, etc., etc. Obviously, the pitch, we kind of knew as well that he would potentially make some changes. But after last week's performance, were you surprised to see him move away from the 4-4-2 that seemed to work so well last week?
I mean, I think at first blush, when you look at Hearts at home and playing two up front, and then Livy away only playing one, you think, is that not a wee bit odd and a little bit backward? But at the same time, you know, the results under Rowe have been consistent enough. And I can see why he reverted back to that system, just to try and get some more width in the team. Again, it's a horrible tight pitch. So I can understand his logic. And I think in terms of the personnel he's got, I was surprised Romans played. I thought Romans might have dropped out on that plastic pitch. Obviously, no surprises. Sterling wasn't there. I know he's injured anyway, but Rowe wouldn't have played. I maybe expected Aaron's maybe to come back if he was fit and give Tav a rest. I don't know. But, you know, I thought the lineup was okay. The concern, I think, when you see that kind of lineup is Chibiti playing up front on his own, because I think we now have clear evidence that he is much, much better and much more comfortable when he's got a strike partner playing very close to him. And that was my main concern really for the lineup, and I did think that came to bear a little bit throughout the game.
Yeah, Alex, we kind of thought on Friday, based on the training pictures, that Nadiri wasn't going to start. I think we kind of guessed that he was potentially one of the players that Rowe was referring to when he was talking about players having knocks, so it wasn't a surprise not to see him start. But would you have rather have seen Miofsky play up front with Chirmiti than just Chirmiti up front on his own?
Yeah, I think it is. That's what I was going to say. That is a comment on Miofsky as much as anything else. I think that he's not kind of trusted to maybe operate the same way alongside. He can't be that I don't know, a twin striker as such as Nadiri was last week. But as Alan said, maybe it's just the formation. Just decided to go. It was only going to be ever going to be one up front today, but you can't help thinking the way we played last week with Nadiri. You watched the game back against Hearts, which we'll probably have a few times, last Sunday's game. Nadiri's involvement was absolutely fantastic, and it's given Big Chirmiti that bit of extra space, I think, that critical bit of extra space that Danny Rowe's always talking about. When we struggled to score at Easter Road, we didn't score at Easter Road. When we struggled to create any chances, he started saying this thing about you need to take more time on the ball, and I thought, well, surely they should be shooting quicker. That's a problem. But I think you can see, like today, with Romans, for example, piling into the box and taking an extra touch that completely further unlocked the Livingston defence. Maybe teed up Mikey Moore at one point in the second half. Mikey Moore's kind of at an angle from 6 yards out. Couldn't quite get a shot on target. You could see what Danny Rowe was talking about there. And I don't want a narrative building up that Chirmiti's only any good against teams that are above us in the table, or the other top two teams that are going for the title this season. I think it was just today a case of him not having the strike partner that just gives him that bit of extra time, a bit of extra comfort, a bit of support, if you like. The chance for me, as controversial as anything else that happened in the game, and as annoying as anything else that happened in the game, was that moment, I think it was about 40 minutes in, where Livingston were doing this thing of just throwing bodies across the front of the goal. I think the keeper had kind of missed a cross. It was bouncing about, and we had two or three shots from really close in, and Big Youssef comes in, and it's about 5 yards out. He's having a shot, and he kind of rolls it along the ground where all the Livingston players are all lying, instead of just like firing the thing into the top of the net. You know, it's a lot easier said than done, but you think it'd be an instinct for a striker to fire the ball up high from that kind of distance, where it's harder to put it over than it is to put it in the top of the net. I think that maybe just speaks to the fact that he's maybe not enjoying the game as much. It's a kind of a fairly standard skill. I think he's definitely got it in his locker, but for him not to perform that, maybe at that point in time, maybe shows that he's just not enjoying the game as much as he would when he's got that strike partner.
Yeah, Alan, we don't get off to the best of starts. We concede a pretty silly free kick game. John Souter, for me, at fault, they're giving that one away, and then from the resulting free kick, we go on to concede the opener. Now, as much as it's a ridiculous free kick to concede, you know, Souter's kind of going for a ball that he can never really win. We've got to be defending better than that, surely, from that free kick. We've got to, you know, just clear that ball and kind of deal with it better.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, I think there's two aspects to it. From a Rangers perspective, it's not defended well enough. We're too flat. I actually think it's Mikey Moore that's got the centre-half, and he runs off him. Again, as a set-up, that's odd. And we're playing a really high defensive line as well, which gives him loads of space to run into, which is frustrating. All that having been said, it's a really good ball into the box, which is inherently difficult to defend, and it's basically the best finish of that guy's career. I mean, I've never seen him play a minute of football before today, but I'm willing to put money on that's the best finish of his career. Because he gets his laces right on it. It's powerful. It's right at the bottom of the near post. It's a really good finish. Should we have defended it better? Yes. 99 times out of 100, does that go in the net? No. It was a good strike from the guy. And it's one of these things, you know, it's Livingston away. We've got three sides of the ground. We're a goal down. Fine. We should still have more than enough in the locker to come back from that. You know, so you can see the goal, fine. It's about how you react to that I'm most interested in, you know.
Yeah, Alex, I didn't think we reacted well at all for the rest of that first half. I thought the first half was really poor, to be honest. I just thought our passing was off. There was players slipping on the pitch. And I never want to mention the pitch when we talk about Livy, because we play on it so often that most of those players have played on that before. We must be used to it by now. We must have replica pitches that are the same at the training ground that we can train on in the weeks leading up to these games. So for me, it's never even anything to talk about, but I just didn't think we looked like a team that was chasing a title. There was a real lack of intensity for me, just a real lack of desire in that first half.
It wasn't clicking. We were lacking that cutting edge, and that's what we're talking about with Chirmiti up front, but we're creating plenty of chances. Oh, my heart sank when Crocker announced at half-time. I was watching on Sky, I wasn't at the game, but when Ian Crocker announced at half-time that was the most, was it 15 shots we'd had on goal? And that's the most shots we'd had on goal in the first half of a match since Dundee United in October, and I'm thinking, yeah, that was two each. We drew that game two each as well. I think at times we maybe had too much intensity. There was a slight lack of concentration at times. I thought we started the game really well. High energy, fantastic save for their goalkeeper after Roman says that header that the goalkeeper touches onto the post. That was him bedded in, going to have a great day there. Prior, their goalkeeper, obviously. But we kept floating the high balls in there, plenty of balls into the box. It was just a lack of cutting edge. I felt as if we were trying to outnumber them. The same as probably we did against Hearts last week. It wasn't coming off. And I think the likes of the build-up, the foul that Suter gives away, Nico Raskin's can't be expected to challenge for the head on the middle of the park. He can't be expected to win headers like that all the time. Nico Raskin, the ball takes a bounce. That's maybe, I think that's been spoken about. John Suter's played there plenty of times. As you're saying, Brian, we've got plenty of pitches at Auchinhowie, plenty of plastic pitches up there. But John Suter didn't look like he was expecting the ball to bounce like that. He goes in late to give away the free kick. I thought we defended the free kick really poorly, you know, although it was a fantastic ball in for Robbie Muirhead and a fantastic finish by Brooklyn, it was a fantastic goal. They scored a fantastic finish, but I thought we could have defended it a lot better. I thought it was a lack of concentration generally. We had a shot, I think we had a Tavra free kick straight after they'd scored, the keeper saves it and big Fernandez lashes it over the bar and stuff like that. Well, there's a lot of huffing and puffing, but I don't know if it was too much intensity. I just don't think there wasn't a lack of effort. I think, if anything, we looked like we were almost trying too hard, if you know what I mean. And it was leading to a bluntness throughout the course of the game. But we didn't respond to it well at all, to us going a goal behind. It looked like it was getting teed up for one of those moments, though. If you're going to win the league, you've got to come out of these kind of games with something. So I thought it was either going to be we scored two late goals for a third straight 2-1 win against Livingston. It's quite dramatic and all that. And so we look like we're in the mood for winning the league. Or when they went 2-0 up, I thought, the best we're going to get here's a draw. And I think there was an element of that by the end. We've kind of hung in there in terms of winning the title. But no, it was a very unsmooth performance.
Yeah. Alan, we get to half-time, one goal down, and Danny Rowe makes a change. He brings off Scott Wilson and brings on Miovski. Scott Wilson, is he starting to worry you a bit, given the hype that surrounded his transfer? And you've got to imagine that although it's only an initial loan deal, we've still got to imagine there's a fair outlay still in terms of wages and potential loan fee, and also what we could potentially pay for him in the summer. He seems to go missing a lot in games for me. What do you make of his contribution so far?
Again, a mixed bag. You know, when he's coming in with a big reputation, great stats at Bruges and things like that, you're thinking, right, can he come in and perform? But you also have to caveat that against he's barely played this season. You know, when he came to Ibrox, he hadn't played, I think, since October or something like that. So there's naturally going to be a bit of bedding in time. And you've got to remember, Scottish football is a unique environment. You know, he's got to get used to that as well. I think you saw it last week at Ibrox against Hearts. When he gets a bit of space, picks out a lovely crossing, Tremiti heads it in. You know, he's got that in his locker. You can see his quality. In a game like today, which was all kind of harem scarum and, you know, defenders throwing themselves at the ball and things like that, you wonder, is that the kind of game for him? Then the flip side to that is, it's the kind of game where a moment of quality can make the difference, and he's the kind of guy that you think can provide a moment of quality. So it's a difficult one for Scott Wilson. I still like him. I still think he's good. I do wonder, though, if he'd be better in a central role. Sometimes I think he gets lost out in the wing a wee bit. I wonder if he'd be better in that kind of number 10 almost, if he can operate both sides and just be a bit more of a threat. No problem with his work rate. I thought he tracked back well and put himself about well. But yeah, in the final third, I think we want to see more of him, definitely. But there's still plenty of time.
Alex, where are you at with Scott Wilson in terms of how he's performed so far?
Exactly the same as Alan. I think the Hearts game last week, he's got a bit of involvement in the build-up to, I think it's Chermiti's first goal, the one that makes it two each against Hearts at Ibrox. And it's one of those, I think if you watch the game back, sometimes you see he's got that touch of class where he's not, as Alan says, up to full fitness yet. And Wolfsburg was having a horrible season anyway, even when he was playing for them. I don't think it was going too smoothly over there. He's obviously been a bit unhappy over there. But I think you can see he does things even though he's not up to full fitness, and slipped the ball, as Alan's talking about, he puts in for Trinity's headed goal last week against Hearts is sublime. You know, he puts it up to crossbar height. It's almost like he knows I put it in a place that only Trinity can get to. So I wonder if Danny Rule has rolled the dice with him today and just taken him off at half time to protect him next week against Celtic. He somebody kicked him round about the halfway line today in the second half. He took a bit of a while getting up, and I was instinctively worried that he's going to be missing the Old Firm game next week. So that tells that the kind of gut feeling, you know, the eye test. I think we know this is a good player, and is. As Alan's saying, he's just going to take a bit of a while to get up to speed. But he's already done enough without being up to speed to show us what he could do. He scored against Kilmarnock as well. I think he's a real deal, and he will improve.
Let's hope so. Second half doesn't start great. We concede another goal. Again, another mistake from Souter. I think it was a mix-up between him and Tav. Again, leads to another free kick. Again, not defended particularly well. They get in and score the goal. For me, this was almost a perfect summation of this game, in that they, you know, created two chances, scored them both. We had, as you said, I think, Alex, we had a number of chances and didn't convert either of them. Do you think that's just... was this just one of those days? As much as we're all disappointed and we're all probably feeling like, you know, there's no chance of winning the league now, but do you think this was potentially just, you know, one of those days that we've seen in other league winning seasons and years gone past where, you know, opposition goalkeeper has a blinder and we just can't quite get the winner?
I think it was just one of those days. I don't feel as if we've lost the title or anything today. I think it's big boys pants time. This is where the run into these things is never smooth, because it's a classic old kind of title race. I think neither Rangers nor Celtic are particularly great this season. It's quite incredible, the symbiosis, Russell Martin and Wilfried Nancy. I think Nancy won 6 points in his time at Celtic and Martin won 7 in his time at Rangers. I think it's 6 league games each. And that's just created this kind of... it's let Hearts and Motherwell, I think. I don't think Motherwell should be written off either. They were sensational last night. I ended up just watching the rest of their game against St Mirren rather than watching Man City against Newcastle. They were tremendous. But no, I don't... The last time we drew at Livingston, we won, was 55 season. You know, and I think Marvin Bartley's Livingston... Well, it sounds like a Rangers supporter making excuses. And to be fair, that's not what Rangers supporters tend to do. We tend to just go crazy at the team and just slag everybody at Ibrox after a game like this. But I think Marvin Bartley's Livingston have instantly improved since they moved Davey Martindale upstairs, or he decided to go upstairs. I think they're 2-0 down at Dens Park last week, come back and draw 2 each instantly. And I know that's a place we've won 3-0 this season, Dens Park, but it's a place we've always struggled before. So Celtic had to, the last minute, they come back, equalised against Celtic at Parkhead into the second half of their game there, and Celtic took into injury time to beat Livingston at Parkhead under Marvin Bartley. So they've clearly improved. The amount of effort they put into that game was unbelievable. Maybe I'm just too old and I can think of too many times when it's gone like this. We always have a draw where we're raging at the fact that we've drawn, we've dropped 2 points, but it turns out in the end up to be quite good. Like, we drew, 20 odd years ago, 2002, 2003, Arteta's involved in a tight title race in England. He's scoring a penalty after we've missed about 15 penalties against Dundee at Dens Park in a game where we're struggling all day. We end up just drawing the game. Looks like we've chucked it, but end up we win the league in the last day of the season. I think we did the same with Hibs. One of the, was it 2009, maybe 2008, 2009, the first of Walters, 3 in a row in his second spell. I think we go to Easter Road and we draw, and the ball's getting cleared off the line and stuff like that. It looks like a disaster. Then Celtic go there the following Sunday and draw as well, and we're back in. I think it just gets messy at this point in a league title race. And we've dropped 6 points in our last 3 away games. That's definitely becoming a concern, the away form. But Hearts have dropped 6 points in the last 2 away games. You know, and going to Fir Park, we're the first team to score against Motherwell at Fir Park since October. and Hibs, well, that's Hibs, we drew at Easter Road, that's Hibs who've beaten Celtic at Parkhead today. I think it's just, it's messy, it's clunky, and it's all about who can hang in there, and particularly like days like today, where you know you're going to get a bollocking from your own support for not winning, just make sure you at least get the draw, you know. So, no, I think I still feel we're in with a right good chance, because this is what we've done all season. I think Danny Rose said that, or since Danny Rose's been in, I think he mentioned in his Sky interview this thing about we were 6 points behind, then it went to three, and blah, blah, blah. We're carrying on the same way. We seem to take a bit, it took a while to put Hibs behind us, then we took a while, we were in front of Motherwell, then we fell back behind Motherwell, then we put them behind us. We've got a chance next week to put daylight between us and Celtic behind us. I've been struggling to get in front of Celtic all season, so I still think we could get to a point. It's kind of two steps forward, one step back, as opposed to vice versa under Danny Rowe. We need to properly leather Celtic next week, and if we're doing this thing where we're fantastic against Hearts and we disappear up our own backsides and have a midweek off and think this is going to be great and have a setback then as a result of that against Livingston, maybe it's as well we had a setback today, so we're totally grounded going into this game against Celtic next week. Although, obviously, you're not going to win the league if you keep picking up the points. But, no, I still think there's a hell of a lot to play for, and I think we're as likely to win the league as anybody.
Yeah, here's hoping. Alan, John Souter signed his new contract during the week, and for me, was it largely at fault for both goals today. Regardless of how this season ends up, should we be looking at an upgrade in the summer in terms of starting centre-back?
Yeah, we should be looking to upgrade centre-back. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think Souter is a reasonable option for sort of domestic games. Obviously, he didn't have a good game today, but you know, we know we've seen him have good games in the past, and he's capable enough. We need Scottish players for the European squad, all that kind of stuff. So it's fine for Souter to hang about, but I do think we need that real first choice centre half that we've been lacking for the past couple of seasons. That kind of, if he's fit, he plays, you know, the organiser at the back. We had it with Goldson, who gave us good service, and then he kind of waned towards the end. We tried to replace him with Proper, which was just a complete nonsense of a signing, didn't work out. And now we've got Giga, who I think's done okay in spells. Done okay recently, you should say. Ultimately, he's on loan and we're not going to buy him. So we just need that consistency at the back. Fernandez is a guy I really like. I think he's come on leaps and bounds in what was, 25 games he's had for us or something like that. I think he's getting better as we go on. I know he's been linked with Arsenal and Dortmund and all these kind of, you know, his agents obviously earning his money, but he's got the profile of a guy that will attract attention, almost irrelevant to his form, you know. Teams will invest in that profile of a centre-half, especially a left-footed one. So I think we need to look at getting him a really experienced, solid partner beside him for next season. For me, that's not John Souter. I think Souter's more a guy that will come in here and there and play, give you 15 games a season. And I think that's maybe reflected in the fact he's only got an extra year on his contract and there's an additional option. But at this stage in his career, you'd think he'd be pushing for a longer-term contract because it might well be his last big contract of his career, so I thought it was curious he's only signed on for that extra 12 months. But yeah, that's a very long answer to a short question. Yes, we do need to upgrade centre-half position in the summer.
Yeah, definitely for me as well. Alex, Jadeghe-Sama, another player I wanted to talk about, because I thought last weekend he showed how effective he can be as an impact sub, but I thought today was pretty poor, if I'm being honest. Does it just underline that he's maybe best suited as a substitute rather than a starter?
Seems to be the way, doesn't it, so far? That seems to be sensational when he came off the bench last week against Hearts, a game that we were already winning at the time. We're just trying to seal it. It was a fantastic cameo. I don't know if he's just exhausted kind of mentally. I know he's a young player, but I think there's still a lot to be said for the start of this season, the absolute chaos at Ibrox. You've got players, particularly younger players, arriving, and everybody seems young to me these days, it has to be said, but you know, young guys arriving at a brand new stadium, a brand new environment. Even if you're coming up from Sheffield, Glasgow's a completely different environment altogether. And as Alan was saying earlier, Scottish football is quite a unique thing. Get the nuances, and your fans are, you know, throwing stuff in the pitch not to get games held up because they hate the coach that's brought you there, and they want to get rid of directors and things like that. It's, this is all part and parcel of football. It's stuff you've got to take on. It's happening everywhere these days. Everybody protests everything nowadays. Crystal Palace doing the same thing with all our Glasner and stuff. But I don't know. It was really tumultuous. And I think sometimes it feels like this season has been two or three seasons. And I don't know if that's getting to players as well. They'll be getting a bit rusty. But when he came off at Fir Park as well, I thought maybe it was time-wasting when he gets subbed off at Fir Park. We're still winning 1-0 at the time. But I think he's genuinely, he gets more petulant, more Alfredo when he's getting subbed off. Every time he gets subbed off when he starts a game. So I don't know if he's maybe starting to lose it, a bit of mental strain there. But no, it was fairly ineffective today, although nobody's really getting past marks in today's performance. But I like him. I think he's got it. I think he was shown a lot in games earlier this year under Russell Martin, where everybody was struggling. He kept going, he kept persisting, kept hammering away at it. And he said some of his goals now have been absolutely magnificent. But no, I would be keeping him anyway, and maybe taking him out the firing line for a few games.
I think, just to jump in, I think Gassama is just one of these players that in a tight pitch with no space, he really struggles. You saw that with Livingston. He had two defenders in front of him the whole time. It's a tight pitch. He couldn't really get going. But then, of course, at that moment in the second half, suddenly there's a bit of space in behind. It's a great ball into him, and he runs in behind, gets taken out, straight red card. You know,
that's a great run. Yeah.
That one moment, he had a perfectly timed run. He was just onside, and it had a big influence in the game. So he's definitely got something, Gassama. He's certainly good for us. But again, as you say, young boy, really. He's played, he must be over 35 games or something like that. You know, I'm confidently say it's the most intense period of games he's played in his career. He might just be burned out a wee bit. Maybe just time to rotate him in and out a little bit.
I think up until October, Alan, he was top scorer. But it says more about everybody else. And he's playing, those European games, he's doing the business against Panathinaikos, kind of home and away, and against Pilsenia, and that's what, July into August. You know, it's been a hell of a long season. But you're right, I forgot that was a fantastic run, as much as the ball for Big Fernandez the day that drew the red card. So that was, even there, it was a pivotal contribution, as you're saying. And I suppose last week against Hearts, he's got the, like you're saying, the tight spaces. Well, last week against Hearts, he's got the full length of the pitch, you know, for that brilliant contribution. So now bang on.
Yeah, hopefully we see more from him in the last 10 games. Alan, we managed to draw ourselves level goals from Fernandez and Moore, both pretty decent goals. To be honest, was it at least pleasing to see some kind of character from the team, or was it too little, too late for you?
I mean, it can be both, really. I think you've got to look at a game in context, and that's sort of, if you'd said this before the match, it'll be a 2-2 draw with Livingston, you'd have said, well, that's not good enough. If you'd have said it'll be a 2-2 draw and your rivals across the city are going to lose a home game, suddenly you think, hang on, is there a light this could be painted where it could be a crucial point? Because ultimately we could end up winning this league by a single point, and we could rewind to this day and say, well, that point was the one. You know, you just don't know how it's going to go. And, you know, as Alex said, these title races, this is how it goes. You know, especially now when both Old Firm teams are probably the poorest they've been in a while, Hearts are in a bit of a hot streak, and then you've got a complete random, or like Motherwell suddenly played way above a level anyone expected. You know, this is how it goes. You know, back in January when we beat Celtic at Parkhead, kind of got back into it, people thought, right, this is going to be a tight run-in. All these teams are going to drop points in the run-in. And then Rangers drop points at Fir Park, and suddenly it's like, right, burn it down. You know, and you can't, Rangers fans can't be that emotionally fragile. You know, it's going to be like that, the way this season is and the way the teams are. There's no outstanding team amongst them. And that means there's going to be drop points, there's going to be frustrations. And today was the perfect example of that. I think it was 31 shots at goal, 14 on target, and we only scored two. And again, Chavites, as we've heard, he should have scored that in the first half from the Stramash. Roman's really unlucky not to score. Moore had a good effort that the keeper saved. Keeper had a really good save from the Ovsky second half. Even late on, there was one, I think Alec mentioned it, Roman's got down, pulled it back to Moore, who kind of ran in, got his shot away, but the keeper's kind of trailing leg on the line blocked it. I think there was another, Sky didn't show a replay of it right at the end to try and make it 3-2. There was a block right on the goal line as well. I think Bajrami got the ball back in. So again, it was, you know, we've got no divine right to win these games. And sometimes a game is going to be like that. Now, it's not great to drop points. It's really not. But look, we're 4 points off the top with 10 games to go. We are well in this title fight. We are well in it. And, you know, I think we need to buckle up because I think there's going to be a few more peaks and troughs between now and May.
Yeah, hopefully more to celebrate than days like today, to be honest. Alex, controversial incident towards the very end of the game in injury time. Mikey Moore goes down in the box or on the line, or depending on your view. I was surprised that nothing was given at the time by the referee. They spent, you know, at least 4 minutes reviewing it on VAR. The commentators seem to suggest that the VAR team had kind of agreed that there was some foul of some description, and then mysteriously they came to the conclusion that there was nothing to give and, you know, play on. What was your view of the whole incident?
I think this is the job of podcasters, just to kind of stand up and say exactly what they thought on these really controversial incidents. So I didn't see it, Ryan. I just went for a cup of tea. Once it went that point at injury time, I was like, what? No, I'm starving. I need to get that. How fat am I? I need to be eating all the time. It was too much. How he doesn't give a foul? I think that if he's Ryan Lee, he's badly positioned. And Mikey Moore is pulling the trigger. I think he's taking a shot.
Yeah.
His arms go to the sides. He's obviously balancing himself to have the shot with his right foot, and he's going to place his left, the shot where that's where Cammy Kerr comes in and takes out his shin. First things first, I just thought, how is he not seeing a foul there? Give the penalty and a red card and then wait for VAR to change it if you want. It just seemed a really, really bad bit of refereeing. I don't think he was very well positioned, but Mikey Moore, because he's about to take a shot, and he's going to position, he's going to stand his left leg. When that gets taken away from him, he gets spun so spectacularly because of what he's about to do. That if the referee was standing on the goal line with Jack Button, they were saying this earlier, he could still see that was a foul. It's difficult to dive in that way that he went down, making him more. So he doesn't give the foul, and that's where the trouble starts. I've got to admit, VAR, there's an argument, you can see every decision they have made or not made since. I think there's a very, very solid argument for all of them. I don't look at where Cammy Kerr's foot lands in the box. Look at where his foot contacts Mikey Moore's left shin. And that's where the foul's made. And I can see why that does look like it could be outside the box, just and no more. That does look like it could be outside the box. The denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, that is so subjective. He's obviously about to shoot an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. So he's obviously about to shoot clean on goal from the edge of the box. There's a Livingston, the left-back's coming round a wee bit just as he's fouled. There's another centre-half to the right-hand side of Mikey Moore. But I don't think either of them are going to stop him getting a shot on goal. But what qualifies as an obvious goal-scoring opportunity? I mean, as saying somewhere else, like Gabriel Batistuta used to score them from 40 yards out. So if you fouled him in your own half, it's a denial of a score. I can see the arguments for why. I can agree with VAR. I can see the arguments you're putting forward for it not being the red card or the penalty that lets them intervene. But I just cannot. I don't think MD can see why that referee didn't give a foul. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, just to jump in, the only thing it absolutely was not was play on. You know, yeah. Either has to be a penalty and a red card. Yes. Either has to be a penalty or it's a red card. And the referee picked the one option that everybody knew was wrong, which is completely inexplicable. Completely inexplicable. And as you mentioned there, the commentators in Sky can hear the VAR discussions. And you hear Crocker and Sutton discuss it. The VAR is saying it's a foul because they say, right, it's a foul. Right, where is it? They're just looking at it. They're telling us what they're doing. So if the VAR have said it's a foul, how on earth can they communicate to the referee just play on in that scenario?
No, but is it not because it's just a foul that they can't actually get involved?
Or if he's made a grievous error, they can come back and say, you need to go to the monitor. to say, well, is this a goal-scoring opportunity? But to not send the ref to the monitor is bizarre, completely bizarre. And suddenly you do get the more kind of, is it more out than in type thing from the cup final not so long ago, you know? And it just becomes conspiracy that the referees just don't need. I mean, it was a really, really poor decision. I think it's a penalty. I agree with you, Alec. I think Sky were quite disingenuous with the replay they showed. They paused it when there's initial contact in the side of the leg, but that doesn't take Moore down. He keeps going after that contact, and it's the contact on his back foot that actually gets caught under the ball, and that's well inside the box. I think I've seen on Twitter the ref's watch. I don't know who that is. I think it's a retired Scottish ref. Basically slating it, just saying, like, it's an obvious penalty, can't believe they've got it wrong.
Does that count then? The foul on his right foot, he's about to shoot with. I thought the foul was the left onto...
Yeah, that could...
Cammy Kerr's left foot onto Mikey Moore's left shin. That seemed to me to be the first contact, and I thought it could only be a continuation into the box if it was shot pulling or holding. And I was about to say they should introduce a new rule.
I think it's because Moore's stride is then affected by the defender's trailing leg and he catches it under and trips him up. Like, I don't think that initial contact's enough for Moore to go down. I think if he goes down on that contact alone, he's probably getting booked for diving. You know, so it's not totally clear. But as I say, to not do anything and simply play on, given the discussions that were clearly being had in the background, is absolutely wild. And this referee, I know he was new. You don't want to go in two-footed on somebody, you know, when they're new, but he's got to get this kind of stuff right. You know, it's a title race. There was, towards the end, the guy, I think his name was Silla, went down, Livingston player, went down with a head injury. He was getting treated, and then he got up and just started playing again. And Raskin actually pointed out to the ref, no, you need to send him off and bring it. And the ref booked Raskin for complaining about it. It's just, to not know these kind of basic rules, it just shows...
And then he pulled us back for the ball was moving. It was a free kick in my own half. And there's no Livingston player anywhere near us. The ball was moving there when you took that free kick.
It's weird. And again, he was on the ball with the Kasama going through in the red and all this kind of stuff. But you just wonder. You do worry, is it a case of it was such a seismic decision that they just bottle out of making it? Or could they just not clarify it? But look, we'll be on Willie Collins' YouTube channel at the end of the month. We'll probably get another apology and all this kind of stuff. And then see where we go.
I must admit, I thought the foul was the first contact. Kerr's left foot with Mikey Moore's left shin, and I could see why that was outside the box. And I thought that then renders the second contact kind of irrelevant because that's the foul. The foul's happened. It's first contact for those kind of things. So, but if that's the case, because you can see clearly, like you're saying, he's then the foot that he's going to shoot with. His right foot gets basically caught because it's a scissor tackle. He's obviously taken him out. So his other Cammy Kerr's other leg comes round and basically kind of traps Mikey Moore's foot almost in his nads, you know, between the top of his thighs, you know. And I'd thought. They do this thing. The one thing they do with VAR, it allows you to analyse the protocols, and they're constantly changing the protocols, which I think is great because it's given us a level of kind of insight into how the laws of the game don't really work sometimes. And they do change them as they go along, as you should do. You find out more stuff, and I thought this whole thing about it can only be a continuation into the box can count as a foul if it's holding or shot pulling. And I thought they should maybe look into upgrading that, changing it to include sliding your arse across a soaking wet
pitch. And I think that's maybe why it becomes even more imperative to send the ref to the monitor. Because the one thing you can slate the refs, okay, but the one thing you can say about them is they only get one look at it in real time. So if you've got the technology and the facility to say, by the way, go and have a slow motion, look at that from a few angles, you should do it, you should employ it. A few seasons ago, the refs were constantly at the monitor at the site, constantly looking at things, whereas now they barely ever go. You know, it's really weird to me. So it's a real deep frustration. And I've got, I don't want to mention this, right, but I watched the highlights just before the podcast started. See the red card that Celtic got today? I don't know if anyone's seen it. Defenders kind of holding each other in the box and the guy sort of slaps his arms, like, get off, you know, and gets straight red for it. That's one of the funniest red cards I've seen in a long time. So at least that cheered me up a little bit. But it is what it is. Dropped points, frustration, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, all to play for.
No, I thought that's interesting. I didn't think the follow through was going to be counted, and I hadn't looked to see whether the follow through was even happening inside the box or not. And I thought it was a case of, it's not a red card, it's not a penalty, so VAR can't get involved. But Grievous, error.
If the referee's made a clear and obvious error, they can send him to the monitor. I could have just about lived with a free kick on the edge of the box and a red card. And you say, right, okay, it is tight, I accept that, subjective to a point. What I can't live with is play on, because that's just bizarre. And I say, if someone's just reminded me in the chat, it's Steve Conroy and Des Roach are the Refs Watch Twitter guys. Neither of whom I think are supporters of Rangers or ever were supporters of Rangers. And they're both saying, look, this is a real shocker, this decision. And it's, yeah, it's difficult one.
Yeah. Alan, you mentioned there that we'll be on, you know, Willie Collins' with YouTube show in the coming weeks, and we'll get an apology possibly, or maybe they'll try and kind of weasel their way into how they think they've made the right decision. But to be honest, that's of absolutely no use to us in this, you know, title running when it's this tight. I mean, and then when I look at the decision, I don't know if you've seen the one from last night, the St Mirren Motherwell game. I thought that was a terrible decision as well. For me,
yeah, I mean, I think that's
the worst,
I think that's
standard of refereeing that we've seen.
I think that's important to point out that from our perspective, we've been wronged by referees, but it's a wider problem because other decisions, like you say, for St Mirren, it's just other teams have been impacted as well. And it's, you know, it just speaks to maybe training's not up to it, or referees are getting over promoted when they're not quite ready, all this kind of stuff. So you've got to drill down and focus on being the best you can be. And, you know, how can we improve the standard? And the whole YouTube VAR reflection podcast, all that stuff, well, I was supposed to drive that. See, like, we're educating referees and things like that, but I'm just not sure it's had the impact they've ever wanted, because we're still seeing these really grievous errors. And you've got to remember, one of the most grievous errors all this season that still might have a huge impact on the destination of the title is the Shankland goal at Ibrox. The one he didn't celebrate because he so obviously handled it and ran through and
he
scored.
He actually says to his teammates,
don't celebrate, it's going to get disallowed. And bizarrely, they just said, I saw it, mate, you're all right. You know, it's wild. It's absolutely wild. And in the context of this season, that was a huge, huge moment that we've still, I don't think, ever had a real proper explanation as to why suddenly he was allowed to handball it in that moment. So it's littered with these kind of errors that VAR was supposed to help us eliminate, but they're always going to keep coming up when the referees still don't appear to be up to scratch in terms of their basic understanding of the rules.
Yeah. Alex, does this warrant any kind of response from Rangers? The one thing I think about is if this happened over the other side of the city, we'd be hearing about this for the next 3 weeks, and it would certainly be getting used in the build-up to an Old Firm game. Now, I don't particularly like the tactics they employ in terms of how they, you know, go after referees and whatnot and things like that, but is it time that the club make a bit more noise about these things?
No, I don't want to be like them. I don't want to be like them. Referees, ganging up on referees is cowardice as far as I'm concerned. The guys don't get paid enough. The whole country absolutely despises them, and we're in danger of having no referees ever. They're not good enough. It's not good enough. And as Alan's saying, the standards have really got to improve. But I think we need to put more money into it to make sure it does improve. I must admit, I go to a lot of non-league games and all that as well. And it's horrendous. It's just, it's the easiest kind of knee-jerk, you know, rage sells. And it's always been the same with refs. They perform a kind of social function. It's like a social pressure valve. We could just go along and slag the utter shite out of a referee. That was an awful decision today. That we didn't get the foul. I think we have to do, I know you're saying, Brian, it's almost become a kind of defensive thing. This is why I want VAR. This is why I like VAR. At least it's in there. We need to keep improving it. We need to work from that.
It's still not leading to the right decisions, though, because
only when we don't get them.
If you look at last night, because if you look at last night's decision, they looked at that. They must have looked at that on VAR and somehow still decided that was a red card, which for me was a nonsense.
That guy has really long fingernails. Really long fingernails. And plus, it was really wet. So he's obviously, there's a whole lot of rain in that on it, and it's like hit the guy right in the eyes, in his contacts. He's a clear red card. No, I know what you mean, but there's horrific decisions. There's horrific decisions all the time, but it's like, that's football. That's refereeing. It's going to happen. What you're spot on, though, that the whole thing about every game you ever take part in, there's going to be a horrific decision, but just it's where it happens. That's the problem. The stuff that's totally blatant goes blatantly wrong. It's all humans. It's all human beings that are involved. What happens with Celtic is they will take, if they lose the game or have a setback, they will take the one decision that's gone against them, and it's not about the objective kind of paucity of referee. It's about how much hysteria you can get behind that. You know, so sometimes it's kind of fighting fire with fire. You can't let Celtic own the league that way. And I don't think it's any coincidence that Celtic are vocally, and Celtic people are they're the loudest anti-VAR people, because it means analysis has got. It means they can't get points and get decisions through screaming hysterically. There will actually be some sort of analysis to come in and check the referees that they've been claiming have been having a Masonic conspiracy. We've got 11 minutes of injury time and a red card. I mean, I don't know how much more you guys are wanting. The Grand Master was obviously heavily involved today. Just missed that bit right at the end. But no, it's a difficult balance to strike. If we're too hysterical about it, you become anti-football, which I think... It's like the Trump thing, you know, every criticism's an admission. You know, it's a confession, really. And I think that's what Celtic always scream about, sporting integrity and stuff like that, because they know they would cheat. They do all this kind of stuff. They will do what they can to pressure officials, so they can't understand that other teams aren't doing the same. So I don't want to get to the point where we're just basically refereeing our own games, because that's exactly what Celtic are trying to do. I think it's a key element of what we are as a club, and I've liked the fact that consistently Rangers managers haven't come out and slaughtered referees. Like Martin O'Neill a few weeks ago making a statement that he always knew every decision would go against Celtic, you know, tongue in cheek and all that, but it helps kind of augment the narrative they've got going. But I think we need to have the chats behind the scenes or whatever, maybe Rangers will come out and they'll do something. But I don't know. I'm more upset with how Rangers played that game today than I am with the refereeing decision. But I've always been like that. I've always been like that. I didn't even know it was a penalty. So what do I know? You know?
Yeah, Alan, controversial decisions aside, we shouldn't really let that detract from our own mistakes. At the end of the day, if you want to win a title, you can't be going to the team in the bottom of the division and dropping 2 points for me. And in the wider context of our away form, that's now, what, 3 points from the last 9 available away from home, from our last 3 away games. Is this away form now starting to be a concern for you?
It's certainly a concern, but I don't think it's a case of panic stations. I think, as I said earlier on, excuse me, title races are like this. We're not an outstanding team. There isn't an outstanding team in the league. Points are going to be swapped here and there. I think it's actually one of the reasons why I quite like the split, because when we get to the split, you're playing all the teams around you, so it becomes a bit more exciting there. And in this kind of scenario, all those teams are capable of taking points off each other, and I include Motherwell and clearly as of today Hibs in that. So it's going to be quite tight. And this is what leagues are. This is all over the world. You've got exciting leagues with teams fighting it out, and we used to look at them and say, oh, that'd be great to have a title race like that. And then we've got a title race like that, and we're all, you know, filling our unders about it. You know, this is what it does. This is it. You know, get your balls out and just focus on the running, deliver results, and see where we end up. You know, Hearts have beaten us twice this season, but they're only 4 points ahead of us. You know, it's not disaster. We're still well in this. Now, of course, caveat that with next Sunday was always going to be a huge game. It's now even huger, because if we can go next Sunday and if we can win, again, I know they've got a game in hand, but if Hearts win on the Saturday and then we win on the Sunday, you know, our old rivals are really close to slipping out of the title race. They really are. So, you know, it's all to play for, and we need to just batten down the hatches and get through it, because the team, for me, the team's shown us enough. I'm really frustrated with certain aspects of the play, certain players, certain ways we have approached games. But when you consider where we were under Russell Martin, I mean, we were literally in relegation form under Russell Martin. And now look at us, we're second in the league, 4 off the top. You know, it's been a good bounce since he came in, and we just need to try and get back on the positivity. The good thing is, the next game is the perfect one to restore positivity. So let's focus on that. Because this is, as I said earlier on, this is going right to the wire. And one of my group chats I went and said earlier on, given the way the top six is at the moment, and the way the fixtures might pan out, there is a chance that on the last day of this season, we'll be at Easter Road and Celtic will be at Fir Park. And when was the last time that happened on the last day of the season when a certain man was in the Celtic dugout? I mean, you know, if I could write the script, that's the script I would write. But, you know, it's exciting. This is what we want. You know, I want Rangers to be 25 points clear and coasting it. But look, this is still good stuff. We're still well in the hunt and we're still more than capable. So bring it on.
Yeah. Alex, how are you feeling about our title chances after today? And also, you know, given the recent away form and the kind of difficult trips that we've got upcoming, do you think that's going to prove to be costly?
It might well be, but I'm the same as Alan, the same as I said earlier. And if I can just say, obviously, I've been accused of being smutty at the beginning of this podcast when I was merely talking about an expedition in Africa, and now Alan's encouraging us to get our balls out. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, I hate to see what I've done to Alan there. That's in the course of a podcast, I've turned him from nice mannerly chap into smutmeister himself. But that's whatever we're going to do, I'll get anything out. It would probably scare off Celtic. VAR would certainly have to intervene there. No, I definitely think it's on. It's definitely on. This is how these kind of title races go. When you consider the state we got ourselves into as a support as well at the beginning of the season, and a season I didn't even think we were winning the league was always possible. I never thought it was the major target. It was about a complete rebuild of the club infrastructurally, in the boardroom, on the park, and what have you. You know, to be challenged for a title was going to be a bit of a bonus, and for us to be completely out of it and everybody, you know, completely losing their head about it. It's only October, really. We've got the end of October. We've got Danny Rule in. For us to be in contention at all is phenomenal. But we just don't get any credit for that. I think there's been a nice wee change over the last week or so where the last of the kind of hysterical sack everybody stuff started, I think, maybe on the Wednesday night of the game with Motherwell, and lasted a wee bit into Thursday. But by Friday, we had the issue of the statements about we're going to back the team for the full 90. The supporters officially got together. And I think the win over Hearts, sensational, magical moment at Ibrox. And I think you can actually feel it today. Celtic losing, as we're saying, definitely helped. But I think you saw when Danny Rogue went out on the pitch at the end of the game, albeit Sky managed to find somebody who looked like he was slightly admonishing him from the stand. The fans are applauding. I think we now know it's going to go a wee bit backwards every now and then, but we've been clawing steadily forward under Danny Rowe from the word go, from the moment he came in the door. So, as Alan says, this is the way these title races go, old school title races, but also Danny Rowe is just, he's dealing with the undertow of the way we started this season, even the undertow going back to 2012, whatever. So it's never going to be a clean kind of totally upward curve the whole time. And I think the fans are generally starting to accept that as well. I think we're right up for it. And as Alan said as well, next week it's absolutely colossal. And I think we're in the mood for something colossal as well against Celtic next week. And then we can give them a whole week of mourning about how it was VAR and the Masonic conspiracy and all that, for to have 7,500 in Ibrox for the Scottish Cup game. We're an agenda, and that'll be fantastic fun.
Yeah, I hope you're proved right in the long run. Right, I think we'll call it time there. All that is left for me to do is thank my guests. Alex, thanks as always.
Cheers, Brian. Loved it.
Alan, thanks for joining.
Yep, cheers, gents. Hope to see you again.
As well as being live tonight, the show will be available on all podcasting platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Acast and Stitcher. We'll be back on Friday. It's Rob and Colin who will be looking ahead to the weekend's Old Firm match. Until next time, bye for now.